All right.
Hello.
Welcome, Sam.
Hey.
Sam, this is Konstantin, the kind of
Hi.
Head of the creative Hi. Team. This one has a big old team. How many you got there? Five other people, Konstantin? You
know, working. Depends. Right? I think on episode two we were actually like eight people in total.
Whew. Wow.
So yeah, this is kind of like a fully.
You do know that's more people than we had on the CGI for the. For the animated show, for the
cartoon. Yeah, but it was not full time and just after work and stuff. So
I think
we were a little more than full time for those poor guys.
Yeah. Well, we were chatting before you hopped on, Sam, and it's been 12 months or 11 months since the last one with eight people. So. You know, you had, well, it was like maybe like 3-4 minutes of animation in,
minutes.
Or 3D and you had a week. You had a week to do it. So, you know, it all
yeah, counts. We had 5 minutes, five guys. And we were pushing scheduling, I think, let us do it like a week and a half, if I remember the schedule right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but these guys were actual professionals, so we can't compare ourselves.
Oh, you think they're professionals? Oh, I have stories.
Oh boy, you know, the veil of Hollywood is taken
yeah.
by.
they funny. Were good. The guys we ended up with were quite good. And awesome. Yes, they had some professional training.
Well, a question. I got a chance to chat with Bob Skurr.
Yeah.
About the animated series. He says hi, by the way. And he told me that there was a kind of in the pitch, there was a gorgeous animation, or maybe it was a conversation with you, but there was like a fully rendered, it looked like movie studio quality pitch for the animated series, in that you guys had to pull it back and say, we can't use that because then it will look like they're stepping back into the real world. But
one of the things we had was stuff that we were playing around with.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is more VWE.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a vulture walking through areas firing its weapons, and we used it at Gen Con a couple of times. And so, yeah, we didn't pull it back. It was more of,
reuse that redesignate yeah
would have taken a week to render. It was just a horrendously over the top, so
yeah,
we didn't pull it back because of that. But the edge shading, you know, the green or the red edge shading that came up, again, this is, you know, me being the historian military freak, simplify, he is right. The push in military UI at the time was simplify it, so you just tell the information you need.
Yeah.
So there were some what would now be VR UIs that were being developed in the 90s.
Yeah.
That were, here's a plane, it's a triangle. Here's a, here's the enemy air defense, it's a bubble or a half sphere. Yeah. And they all had edge shading on them to identify enemy or friendly.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, I pushed to have the edge shading on enhanced imaging.
Awesome.
So our conceit on enhanced imaging was simplify the world to just give you the information you need to fight and not be distracted by smoke and birds and things like that. And then the edge shading of, this is enemy, it's red. This is friendly, it's green. I think we did it first for the, you know, but of course the Inner Sphere guys were all edge shaded with green, and the clans were all edge shaded with red, but yeah.
Yeah, that's the propaganda side of things.
That's the propaganda. Yeah,
dirty freebirths.
Yeah, but
well, you're going to be blown away by.
We did have a simplified version.
Yeah,
and yeah, I think we did go and say, well, we just couldn't do it, not at the production levels they needed.
Well, I think your socks are getting knocked off by, you know, where we've come in 25 years, because Constantine and his team have really knocked it out of the park. So we got three videos, and I sent you the links. There's a pilot, there's episode one, which is the one that released last year, and then there's episode two, which, as we're filming this, is unreleased, but this will be released after it premieres. So
they're all on YouTube. You just the third one, you need the link.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm trying to do it on my big screen so that I can be really impressed by all the nice, wonderful stuff rather than on my little tiny iPad. So the first one is which?
The pilot
of the clips. So Constant, where do you guys live?
Germany, mostly. We have now with episode two, we had kind of some more new people. There's one guy from Canada coming in. There's one from Britain. There's one from LA. But the core team is all in Germany. Yeah.
So I was stationed in a little town called Amberg, which was east of Nuremberg, and I patrolled the Czechoslovakian West German border. So my German is Boos de Bahnhof, Ein Bier bitte. Ich bin or concerned bitte, which you told the taxi driver to take you back to your barracks.
Yeah.
I'm told that I pronounced it like an American, so they knew which concern to send you to, whether the German one or the American one. Okay. Hired steel pilot. Oh, geez. There you go.
It is the 31st century, and mankind is once again at war. The battlefields of the future are dominated by huge robotic war machines known as Battlemechs. Piloting these awesome weapons of war are men and women, the elite of the elite, knowing that each battle could be their last. They are mech warriors.
Oh, I like the Hired Steel logo. Sort of reminds me of the Battletech.
Was inspired by that, yeah.
Yeah. Space camo. Leopard? Okay, nice. Reactor online. Sensors online. Weapons online. All systems. Good. I like the V-Cole engine. Racking. Okay, I love how you did the leopard.
Thank you.
The dropship with the rotating engines, because that's always your big problem with the thing. It flies great and it lands, but taking off in the middle of nowhere, nah. So there always had to be some type of vector thrusting on those things. So you guys did a great job there. I did see that you guys did go with the U.S. Navy. Let's have camouflage for all our guys on the ships. That was
well, that's the endless debate whether
I understand why it makes it real, but
it's interesting that you even noticed it. That was actually because the pilot episode was largely done just by me and a friend, because the team progressively grew. Uh-huh. And that was actually the thinking. I mean, growing up, we saw all these Hollywood movies of like Navy soldiers with their blue on-ship camo, which obviously doesn't make sense, but I mean, it looks cool, I guess.
But see, that's you. you play to other people's reality, right? So that's what you were doing there. You know, they expect it because, hey, the U.S. Navy wears camouflage, and yeah, if a sailor falls off a ship, you want them to be camouflaged. But it actually there was these arguments about, you know, hey, the Army and the Marines and the Air Force have these cool camouflage uniforms. Our people want cool uniforms, so let's give them a camouflage uniform. You're right. You know, you're playing to the expectation. That was good. And if it wasn't for some old fart like me, you know, people go, oh yeah, that does look cool. I mean, there's no question about it. The drop was exactly the way I see those type of drops, especially in an built up area. I was waiting for the anti-aircraft unit to give a shot, you know, to shoot. Did I miss something there?
No, you will see later that. The backstory, I think we showed it very much in the beginning with a little text pop in. This is actually way out of the periphery. The planet is called Iron Land. It has some small remarks in actual lore, and we picked it because there's like no big stories has happened on these planets before, so we couldn't get into any lore pitfalls. And meanwhile, it was a very interesting planet because it has an atmosphere, it has forests, it has deserts and stuff. So we kind of picked that one. And there on this planet, there is nobody to shoot down an
airplane. Okay. Okay, so the air defense vehicle, the Stryker, I thought it was.
I think that was marking the landing zone, right, Constantine?
Oh, okay, it was marking the landing, because that was my next thing. So this was an advance party who was out there marking landing zones. Yeah. Okay, cool. By the way, the idea of picking a place that no one else has told a story about to avoid lore pitfalls, this is exactly what I did. So for all the novelists, you remember you were telling me, Travis, that I was, you know, boy, these novels are all linked together. And, you know, how did you manage that? Yeah. Well, I did exactly what Constance did, was everybody had a little area and they didn't cross over that much. You had Mike Stackpole's, and then it was like, here's an area. Yeah, you can do whatever the hell you want there, because no one else is going to touch that area. So, you know, this is how Thurston ended up with, you know, with his, you know, with the Falcons, because no one else is telling the clan story. Charette actually moved over to more Shadowrun stuff after not Sword and Dagger.
I think was his
last one. But anyway, all of them had sort of, here's your unit. Here's an area that there will be, you know, this is your lore.
Yeah.
And go for it. So, yeah, absolutely. That was exactly the right choice. You didn't have to worry about somebody getting on and say, yeah, but in, you know,
that point.
Blake Bardo's novel, blah, 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 happened on this planet.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we even, we have like some guys who are very deep into the lore. I mean, I played all the old games and stuff, but it's not like I've read all the books, so my understanding of the lore is limited to what was used in the games, let's say that. So we have some guys who like actual fact check our stuff, and they're like, oh yeah, this weapon didn't exist until 2 years later, but it could be that he's using an early prototype, so it should be fine. And then we can just pretend that this is an RAC-5, another UAC-5, or the other way around. And
it all works. I totally understand. my brother-in-law, who works for Google, early on in the 90s, worked for a company that made databases. So he gave us a database. And every single source book, times, characters, were put into that database so that we would then go, the editorial staff or me or somebody would go open up this database and fact check. And that was the 90s. I don't understand how people can stick 30 years worth of BattleTech history, fiction, literature, all into, and keep it coherent.
I think CGL has a team. I think they're mostly volunteers, but maybe they're paid on some level to kind of do that. And my brain cannot retain information that way. I just so much respect to those guys. And I have a couple of people in the community, I'll ping and I'll be like, hey, is this possible at this time? Even for Mech Warrior Bulldogs with Bruins, I was kind of like, I helped, frame up that the intro text and the settings and stuff, and give it context, because Bruins had just had the animation. And I was like digging through Sarna. I was like, what planet? Because that was part of a major invasion, a major part of lore. I was like, where could we stick this? Where would this mercenary unit possibly be? It has to be on that kind of planet. And so we kind of found a niche where they were.
I mean, this is why we did objective raids, by the way.
Yeah.
That source book, which was, here's a whole bunch of planets, here's what's on the planets, have fun.
Yeah, awesome. That was good. All right, you ready for episode one?
Sure.
All right, let's do it.
Let's say we continue. Episode one.
Detecting target structure. Scout drone changing course. New heading. Nav point alpha, grid delta 810. Be advised, target alpha is an old SLDF weapons depot. Proceed with caution.
Roger, Spectre. Show us what you got.
We'll go, Lance Leader. Patching drone feed now.
Okay, drone. Remind me to talk about drone.
Busy down there.
Break! Multiple hostiles sighted. Focusing on heavy mech. Thunderbolt. Processing unit ID.
Shark on bones. Looks like pirates.
Pirates? What are they doing here?
E-Quest Lance.
Relocate to nav point alpha. You are advised to secure the target structure at all costs.
Roger, Spectre. Relocating to Delta 89.
Securing target structure.
Yeah, you got the
all hostiles.
The heavy
walking. Equus, advance along all new waypoints.
Huh? What the? I'll be damned. Just when everything seems so smooth, someone's trying to bomb the party. Come on. Start up your detectors, Chuck. Hey, Dave. Come in, Dave.
Enemy
scouts sighted. 6-0. I'll take him out.
Oh shit.
It's down.
Dave.
Okay.
There we go. Meeting. Fuck. Stay busted. Don't let him escape. Echoes.
Take
your mouth. Yeah. And on the news. Oh, death from above.
Pilot, turn off your engine and surrender.
Oh, not real death from above.
Turn off your engine and
surrender. Go to hell.
All right. Nice.
Turn to formation and continue to target nav point alpha.
Let us hope that they don't know what is coming.
I always love that locust animation. My favorite, with the tracers and taking out. And you can see the laser kind of, you know, do some preliminary damage to the leg.
Damage and cut it.
Yeah.
And you've got, and again, you got sort of the motions right. So locust is just running as fast as it can. The heavies are throwing up clods of dirt as they're walking. I was hoping for a death from above.
you gotta save it.
I also really, really liked the professionalism exhibited by the attacking side, the hired steel guys, the you know, proper radio discipline, no unnecessary chatter, etc. And then you contrast it with a locust pilot who's goofing off. And when something goes up, he's not sending out a proper spot report. He is, you know, just yelling into his mic and trying to run. The use of drones, we didn't have them back in my day, so they didn't really show up, but they make a lot of sense. And again, you're showing how properly trained these guys are. And you know, the overhead drop ship, or wasn't a drop ship,
had drone. Been, yeah, drone video,
yeah, but you know, they're up there getting the feed, identifying things, sending a proper spot report back to the ground unit. The ground unit's responding. The fact that the bad guy has red to help you identify which is also a good thing. And the animation is just fun and it's great. And also like the music too. So
yeah, this was for the pilot, it was actually a pre-composed track that we just purchased the license. But mm-hmm. for episode one, we had this EDM artist approach us, who normally does this like kind of dubstepy electronic dance music. And he was like, oh yeah, are you guys interested? I can compose for you. And I was like, does it fit our style? And I sent him a few resources, and he kind of made this like orchestral, but not orchestral and modern, but not too dubsteppy soundtrack. And it was perfect. So we worked with Patrick again for episode two, and I guess we will in the future.
Yeah, no, that was really, really well done. I enjoy it. I'm enjoying the story coming up. Yeah. You know, it's a lot of fun. Only 3 minutes, but
Constantine, who builds the story and dialogue? Who are those credits go to?
For episode two, it was mostly Charlie's initial ideas, and then we bounced it back like 9 or 10 versions between me, him, and Bernard, I think, back then. Yeah. Because for episode one, the team already grew a little bit. We had Bernard come on board. You will see him on Sunday again. Our guy from Austria. And so
awesome.
It's mainly a team effort. But for episode two, we also avoid some of the mistakes that we did in episode one. We bounced the script back between a few community creators. For example, Tex did a proofread of the whole script and texified his lines a little bit. because what actually was told to us is that let us hope that they don't know what is coming. It's a very German way of saying stuff, because that's how we say it in German. But by not using the abbreviated versions like that's or what's, we actually gave Tex the impression that he was a clanner, because I was told that clanners do that.
You're absolutely right. I was going to bring that up.
Yeah,
it was. I think no, Data still beat us by that. But yeah, that was one of those little things we threw in, told Marty and Bob, clanners don't use contractions.
Yeah.
Well, I can blame all you guys, because my whole life when I've been writing, I try to avoid contractions when I can. Like, I'm not anti-contraction, but if I can avoid it without sounding pretentious, you know, I will. I'll generally prefer to write out the words.
And the thing is, in the German translations of the novels that all our people read, that is not really a factor, because we don't have this way of abbreviating stuff in German. So I don't really know what the distinction was there, but that's a little bit lost in translation there. Yeah,
that's interesting, because on all the English books, they make it a huge point, you know, that you don't use contractions, even to the point where Johanna, you know, loves to just stomp the shit out of anybody who uses one on accident, or, you know, Freelon, you know, will stomp anybody. I'm curious how that was kind of either worked around or something in those old books, if they just omitted those scenes or those lines, or switching with something else. But yeah, that's interesting. A German viewer who's familiar with the English translations can, you know, maybe chime in and let us know.
Yeah, it would be interesting. I mean, they had the same thing with Data on Next Generation.
Right, right.
So, and I know those have been translated in German too. Mm-hmm. And they became not plot points, but idiosyncrasies that were commented on. So I'm wondering how they handle that particular piece of storytelling. So yeah, comment down below. Yeah.
Well, then my question for you, Constantine, is why did you guys go with English on Hired Steel? Is it just the market is bigger? Why isn't it in German?
If you
grow, or is there a German version? Is there a German?
No. We actually, for episode one, we got Russian subtitles for the first time. For episode two, we will have Spanish and Russian subtitles. But we obviously went with English, because if you grow up in Germany, you have to speak English. And we are all bilingual, and it doesn't really make sense to just cater to a German audience, because I think the German audience is actually our fourth largest audience. So American and Russian, and I think the third largest is actually United Kingdom. It just doesn't make any sense to go with German.
Yeah, so MechForce Germany, those guys were wonderful and also a bit crazy. BattleTech is not a game, it's a lifestyle. I've got to remember the German of it. It's BattleTech ist keine Spiel, ist ein Liebe? No.
Liebe?
Something like that. I was at the Essen Toy Fair with these guys. They ran a bunch of BattleTech stuff back in the 90s. They had BattleTech camp. They went out.
Sounds glorious.
To a campground, bought out the campground, and played BattleTech in a campground. It was sort of a convention, but you had to get up at 7 o'clock in the morning to play BattleTech.
That's awesome.
And, they all spoke excellent English. I didn't have to try to pull off any of my German. When I went to college, I had to marry my German teacher so that I could get through the 2-year requirement of a foreign language. True story. It was, second year German was tough. Yeah. I didn't marry her until after I got through 2 years of German, but
learning German as a not native speaker must be super crazy, because we have so many of these exemptions and daddy does and all this weird
have
stuff.
Have you tried English? Yeah. our language is this conglomeration of French and German and some Swedish or at least Scandinavian inputs. You guys the only problem with you guys is you put the verb at the end of the sentence, and so you have to wait 5 minutes while you're waiting for the verb.
Yeah, well, I'll play. We haven't done it recently, but last year we would do this a lot with my little one. She was 4 at the time, early 5. And we would play like word games where we would go over when the same word means different things, you know, like 10 or 10 or 10 or deer or deer, you know, and you know, or we would do like when animals have plurals, you know, you can have you know, a deer or you can have many deer, you know, and kind of when you use the S, when you don't. So yeah, it's good times, you know.
Yeah.
And I was through all those word games with my little one, I was like, Kai, who would want to learn this language? It's crazy. You know.
But I had a lot of fun with our German players and folks down at FanPro was great. When we came over for Essen, he put us up at his place. You know, when FASA went away, FanPro picked up the license from what I understand and kept it alive.
Yeah, definitely. So. All right. This is a big one. I haven't seen this one either. This will be my first time.
All right.
And,
okay, that's the opening for Return of the Jedi.
I repeat, Shark 4, this is command.
I like the coffee cups. Can't do war without coffee.
Comms check, Shark 4, command, please respond. What the hell is going on? Base, this is Dave. We've got a problem.
Yeah. Oh, something's under the tarp.
Kamo has lost all contact with scouting elements. Shark 4 has gone dark.
That's just fantastic. For Amara's sake, shut that alert off. I think we all know we're in trouble now.
Wait a second.
What's that? Oh, yeah. Get the hovercraft going.
Equus, Spectre. Enemies are on high alert and moving in your direction.
God damn it. Time for Plan B.
Roger that, Spectre. I've got profiles on the radar. I'm reading 4.
Go, catapult.
Confirming. That's 6 enemy units.
Roger, Equus 2. Equus, spread out, 100-meter intervals. Call targets and put the herd on them. Equus 2, pop smoke.
That looks great.
Loco, fire in the smoke, stay clear.
Okay. There's a real smoke grenade, by the way.
Commencing fire support.
Oh no, not the Savannah Master!
Enemy detected.
Good.
Nice try, bucko.
Hey, 4. Did you eat enough shells for today?
You hit a locust, but not a goddamn tank?
That's enough, folks. Time to earn our money.
Nice. Okay. Other than destroying the Savannah Massacre, I'm very happy with this. But yeah, no, it was great. You're definitely using a lot of modern. You got to remember, I'm stuck back in the 90s. So the chaff, the smoke grenades, things like that, weren't in the fiction. But that's okay, yeah, because this is 30 years later, and it's part of that expectation. Mm-hmm. And I think it adds a whole lot to the battle. You're seeing move, counter move. Again, the attacking force is very, very professional. The mercenaries less so, or the defending force less so.
Yeah.
I really, really love the so that when they pop smoke and that whole line came up, mm-hmm. I've actually seen that in the real world, where a smoke projector awesome. Puts out and they pop not on the ground but out in front.
Yeah.
In that sequence. So that was, again, this, a lot of this is when you're telling military stories, use reality as much as you can, that way you don't have to explain it.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was a lot of fun. Again, you got the movements of all the individual different vehicles going really, really nicely.
Yeah, those hovercraft looked great.
Yeah.
Going over.
Yeah, they were fun until you hit them.
Destroyed them. Yeah. We put so much work in them. And then we just killed them off in like 30 seconds. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of the thing. These pirates don't really know what is coming to them. So mm-hmm. so they sent these two hovercrafts front, and suddenly they approach this giant front of like four enemy mechs behind the smoke wall. And yeah. regarding these mech quirks that you mentioned, each of our four mercenary heroes has like kind of one quirk on his mech. So the catapult is kind of like the spinning radar guy with mm-hmm. like smoke grenades. The rifleman obviously has this giant gauss rifle and these big anti-aircraft lights on his shoulders, mm-hmm. so he can just turn up his arms and shoot in the sky.
Right.
Then we have the hunchback with all of the close quarter stuff, with like the chaff and the explosive mm-hmm. reactive armor and these claws yeah. and some other surprises. And then
that we'll see in the next episode.
A surprise that hovercraft, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's true. And then we have the the Shadowhawk is piloted by Tex with like the AMS and all the squad lead stuff. So that was kind of our attention.
I also like the fact that you had one of the mercenary pirates, or not the mercenary, the attacking pirates, or the attacking force, get a little ahead of themselves, get a little excited about the, it gives some personality. Yeah. It makes the attackers less robotic. Adds a little drama to what's going on. Yeah. Is, hey, you got somebody who needs a talking to after the battle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Don't.
Reminds me, did you guys watch Rome on HBO?
It's a great
series. The intro scene in Rome where
front rank, first battle scene, they're fighting the barbarians.
Yep.
And
Pullo keeps pushing on. Pullo. Yeah, Pullo. Yeah.
Yeah, and the centurion has to grab him and keeps pulling him back.
Yeah, and then they're like, oh, screw it, we just got to advance our line to accommodate this fool. But no, mm-hmm. that's a great series. God, that's a good one.
It was one of the reasons I subscribed to HBO back in the day. I had to get my Rome.
Definitely. No, it's good. It's it goes by so fast. It's like, wow, four minutes is gone already. Oh my god.
4 minutes, 11 months of work, 11 months of my life.
Well, I mean, you've got a lot to be proud of, and your team has done a tremendous job. I mean, it's an engaging hey, you know, another 12 minutes of animation and the battle will be over. So what's that?
Exactly.
Four more years, right?
It's just so regarding the production time, I will touch on this more with our talk on Sunday, but it's like we didn't intend this to be so long. So it's just when we decided to turn up the scale on so many levels, we are doing humans now, we are doing facial motion capture now, we are doing like I worked like I think 6 weeks on the base alone, and you end up just seeing it a little bit in the background, mm-hmm. like way too detailed.
No, dude, yeah, details are seen even subconsciously, and that's how you make the thing look real. I mean, I knew immediately you had the vertical shot of the base the last episode with the drone.
Yeah. Yeah.
The minute you showed me that horizontal look, I knew exactly what it was.
Nice. Yeah.
And it looked real. I knew, you know, I knew the connection. And it's because of those type of details that you don't notice formally, but it adds to the reality. So yeah, I understand getting something out for because you got a ship, but never apologize for putting too much detail in.
I did notice that we did not see what was below the tarp. That might be a surprise.
Yeah,
that's
going to be a you're going to unload it, and it's going to be some type of NLRS.
Yeah, I mean, you can kind of piece it together if you think about what is being said and stuff. So I'm not gonna take that away. But we left enough surprises and closed doors and closed hangar doors and stuff to tell more of the story. Yeah. And episode three that we are already working on is gonna be less crazy to produce, so we can hopefully do it a little bit quicker.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is really, really interesting. You know, I want to see the end of the fight. You know, it was just like, yeah, this is cool.
Thank you.
It's good work, Constantin, and hopefully the community responds and maybe get some more talent coming out of the woodwork to kind of, you know, throw behind.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we were already very lucky with the response after episode one. We got, if you watch the credits, the team kind of got a lot longer. we had Diamond come out of the woodwork in Canada, who's like an actual FXTD at these big Hollywood Marvel shops. And he sent me some files that I used, for example, for the Catapult LRM launch. And this guy is just how we can think up these giant node trees with like Python code and custom nodes and stuff. And I was like blown away by that. So that's already very helpful. And we have someone like Konstantin, actually, his name is also Konstantin, but with a K, come in and like he can draw storyboards, which is like just mind-boggling. This comic drawing style. We are drawing up this big storyboard for episode three that we can then publish afterwards. But because nobody from us can draw, like I can't even draw stick figures. So that's really helpful. Yeah.
Yeah. The storyboarding is, I got a touch of it during the cartoon. It helps so much when you have a storyboard and then you get to translate that to a 3D model. It's so much simpler than you telling the artist, well, they're going to come out in a line and they're going to do this. No, just give the guy a little map and a storyboard and say, I want these scenes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So we are going to release this, I guess, tomorrow by this time, somewhere around, and then we'll see what people say.
Yeah,
definitely. And for those, if you want to get a little behind the scenes of how it's created, we'll be doing a chat with Constantin and his production team in a new episode as well. But yeah. And of course, if you want to see more, support these
like
guys
and
on
subscribe.
Patreon.
Sorry.
Yeah. TMC on Patreon. Is it just TMC?
Is
that your Patreon tag?
I think it's TMCDE because TMC was already taken. Yeah, TMCDE.
TMCDE on Patreon. You know, help these guys out, help them fund, because certainly if nothing else, the electricity cost for rendering these things has got to be substantial. You guys can commiserate on rendering. How long does it take to render an episode, Constantine?
Cumulative, I guess, month by this time. I mean, Bernard and I seriously upgraded our hardware to like these giant RTX 3090s. So we can even render these scenes, but I actually looked yesterday on my meter down in the basement. I averaged like 10 kilowatts a day for the past nine to 10 weeks. So that's like 50% more than we usually burn.
And everybody thinks you're just mining Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, if you're enjoying these episodes, help these guys pay their electric bill and their hardware costs to get them, good video cards and pay those bills. So if nothing else, but this has been fun, Sam. It's always fun.
That was great. Thank you so much for having me. And again, you guys, Constantine, tell your team you're doing great work.
Yeah, I will. Yeah. Thank you very much.
It's good stuff. All right, thanks, guys. This is the Renegade HD signing off. We'll catch you on the next Fun Watch Party or podcast, and have a good one.
Cheers. All right. Bye. Bye-bye.